Hey, everybody, this is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. More on that later, as a matter of fact. But in the meantime, Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as some video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Excuse me. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, you can go to pnwa.org. We're doing something a little different this year. The PNWA puts on the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference every summer. It's one of the biggest conferences in the country, Writers Conference, one of the bigger writers conferences in the country, and also one of the oldest. And we bring in 20 to 25 agents, dozen editors from all over the country, 400 to 500 attendees. It's a great conference. And this year we're offering something called the Leap of Faith. What that is if you want to sign up for the conference early, before we've even listed all the agents, if you sign up before you even know what agents we're bringing, you get to meet more of them. You get a bonus pitch session, and it costs you less money. So if you want to sign up for a reduced cost now, ahead of time, go to pnwa.org and take the leap of faith. Believe in yourself. There's bound to be an agent or two there who represents what you write, I am sure, if you do that sort of thing. Okay, today, well, first of all, happy pre-Thanksgiving for those of you in the United States. It's going to be, I'm broadcasting now on the 24th, and so Thanksgiving's just a couple days away. So happy pre-Thanksgiving for those of you who are listening live. Today's a little special. It's a do-over. My charming and friendly guest, Anna Leffler, was with me about a month ago, but technology intervened, and we could not finish our show. Sadly, we were cut off mid-conversation, and it was a good one, and I swore to have her back on as soon as I could, and today is as soon as I could, so I have her back with me. Anna is, she has written for television, she's written for many print periodicals and online, but she is also the author of Chictionary, a humorous nonfiction work. But recently, she dabbled in the world of fiction, or she's begun to dip her toes into the world of fiction with Preschooled, I should say, a humorous but poignant look at young, upwardly mobile parents and the contortions they put themselves in to get their kids into the right schools. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back. That's a fantastic description. I love it.
Is it? Good. It's funny, kind of point, you know, really humor. So you're a funny person. You write, you like, humor is one of the means that you communicate with the world.
Absolutely.
But I've always felt that humor, if it's going to really work, is just another means of delivering the truth. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just another package. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. And a lot of times it works best if it's another way of delivering a painful truth, because it's,
yes,
it's, there's a knife edge there. It's a very, very narrow boundary between humor and pain. And I mean, there are lots of cliches about comedians and humorists and why that's how they do what they do, or why they do what they do is they're dealing with their own stuff. They're in pain, or they come from pain.
Yeah.
And I absolutely believe that. But my sense of humor has definitely been a defense mechanism for me my whole life. So, and my goal with this book, I mean, there's a ton of funny material in that world. But to me, if it's just funny and you're kind of frothy and up at the surface, that's great. But to me, that's not entirely satisfying. So
right.
I definitely was shooting to go into some of the darker areas of Is this how marriage is supposed to feel at this point? And
yeah.
What do I do alone in my house? I mean, those are two different characters, obviously, but to
right.
me, that's what makes it satisfying, is dipping into the darker emotions. But they're all related to comedy. I agree with you.
They are. Absolutely. Yeah, I always thought that the comedy is so tricky in that it's a great way of looking at the truth, of revealing something, and yet the comic writer or comic artist, however you express it,
mm-hmm.
has to, I always think, because I did comedy too, and I always thought the thing I didn't want to do is sell the truth upstream for the joke. That if there was a
right.
moment that asked for poignancy instead, just be willing to do it instead of having yeah. to always hit the joke.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a transition, unless you're just incredibly gifted and get it from the start, I think that's a transition a lot of times that comes over time. I mean, if I look back at, you know, things I wrote on the web, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I'm kind of gratified to see that I don't feel like I need to hit that button as much as I used to. You know, it was almost
right.
like a safety thing, like, well, here's another laugh,
yeah.
here's another laugh. It's nice to kind of unclench and not be afraid to go, well, you know, this part isn't funny, but I needed to say it, or
yeah.
the character needed to go through that, or it's very satisfying to change gears like that, you know.
For the comic person, I think it can be challenging to let go of it, because my guess is comedy was one of the ways, I don't want to put you on the couch here, but I'm guessing it's one of the ways you got people to like you. It was one of the ways
oh, of course.
You probably felt safe in social situations where you felt most comfortable and most in charge.
Absolutely.
You know?
I still do that. I mean, I won't even tell you that I've outgrown that, because it's it's definitely, I can get a little almost manic if I'm nervous enough around a group.
Yeah.
I'll get a little too rapid fire.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I can make somebody laugh, then like the weapons have all been put down on the table, at least for the time being. Because,
yeah.
I mean, you know how it is when you meet. And, you know, it took me years to learn that you know, everybody sees themselves a certain way. And it took me ages to realize that sometimes people are not seeing me the way I see me.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, I get a lot of, you know, when I first met you, I thought you were going to be like this really mean cheerleader, you know, which is so funny because I was in the marching band. I was so not at the pool kids table.
Right.
And I think people can draw, like, their shields may be up. I'm totally seeing myself as a dork who wants to be liked, but that may not
yeah.
be what they're seeing. And so they've got all these presuppositions, and humor, especially self-deprecating humor, which I'm prone to in person.
Yeah, sure.
That kind of lets everybody let out a notch, like, oh, maybe she's not what I thought she was. And man, it was decades before I finally went, yeah, maybe I need to be a little bit more aware of, you know, people don't know all my flat sides or all my dorkiness right up front like I do. You
right.
Because I always
right.
assume everyone else is cool.
See,
you know?
I'll tell you, boy, every time I think I know what other people are thinking, I am just flat wrong. I mean,
right?
Every
yeah.
time. Every time. I just really should just, in fact, I just published a piece on Huffington Post about how I've stopped reading reviews of any reviews.
I saw
reviews.
That. I love just, that.
Okay. So you said, and it really, because I've got to get out of people's heads, man. It is a,
yeah.
it is a maze of no return when I go there. And so I got to get out of it.
Yeah. No, that's brutal. I'm trying to do that right now with preschool because, you know, you get curious and then you go,
sure.
why did I look at this?
Okay, so preschooled, now, we were starting to talk about this, and it was really an interesting conversation about, so it's about this world of prestigious preschools. It's set in Los Angeles, as I recall.
Santa Monica, yeah.
Right, Santa Monica. And so you've got a lot of upwardly mobile parents making a lot of money, a lot of type A people going, go, and they want to get their
right.
kids into the very best preschools and the wackadoo things they do. But this is a world you lived in for a time yourself, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This one is this one's kind of drawn from the trenches, and my kids are older now, but I kind of think of this as a kind of a twisted love story, a little love letter to those years, because, you know, your children are small and they're very, it's a very tender time. I have all these lovely memories, but there's this backdrop to it of all this type A stuff that I'd say part of it was kind of put on me and part of it I did to myself because of my own tendencies, you know?
Yeah. And,
so yeah, it's definitely, I drew on both my experiences and the experiences of friends kind of in that level of preschool world. And then use that as a backdrop because there's literally an unlimited amount of material. And I wanted to set the three different stories, which are real stories. They're not always comedic, as we were saying, but
right.
It's fun to set it in a world that has so much running in the background, so many silly things that are running in the background, to kind of, you know, bounce off some of the darker stuff.
Well, one of the things you write about, which is interesting, which I think catches a lot of people by surprise when they have kids, because, you know, most people who have kids wanted to have them, you know, on some level. But this thing can happen to you at that point, of course, where, and it's a strange thing of mixing in sexuality and parenting, but you're still a person who
right.
wants to go on having adult relationships with people, however, whichever gender you prefer. And
right.
but in our minds, it's a tricky thing to match those things, whether you're the husband or the wife, with being a parent. And so it's how do you let yourself evolve as a person while you have this very asexual role of looking
right.
after the little ones? And you deal with that in this book.
I think it's kind of a crucible for a marriage to have children.
Yeah.
No matter how highly evolved you are, how intellectual you are, how good at multitasking you are, I think it's a sea change because you know, you were 2 points on the graph and now you're three. Now you're triangulated.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
everything changes. And I mean, you've put your finger on the big conundrum, which is, you know, there are all these articles that you see, especially in, you know, certain kinds of magazines that tend to be aimed at
yeah.
moms and women. It's like how to keep the
yeah.
romance alive. And,
yep.
and man, it is, there's no simple answer to that. I really don't know. I've talked to a lot of girlfriends about this. And
yeah.
we all say the same thing. I've talked to male friends about it, too. Everybody says the same thing, which is no one has really figured out how to crack the code of we still have that same mojo between the two of us. Oh, and then there's this child, you know. I'm not saying it's good
yeah.
or bad. I'm saying it's inevitable.
Right.
And it's
yeah.
hellishly challenging, even under the best, most rock-solid circumstances. It's not sexy. It's
no,
just,
there's nothing sexy about being a parent. And,
no.
and you know what it reminds me of? No, there's nothing about I don't care. It's
nothing.
Not, it's
I'm
just a totally
sorry.
Different thing. No, there isn't.
And that's
it doesn't
not good
mean,
or, I mean, it's not supposed to be, but still.
No. No, and I didn't want to know about my
parents'
sex life.
No. No.
And anything I did learn was unwanted, I can assure you.
And that's how the therapy industry rolls along. Yes.
That's right. No, I've got
exactly.
so I've got a metaphor for you. Tell me what you think. It occurred
yeah.
to me as you were talking about this, which is that the sex life of a married couple is not unlike an author's relationship to their work, which is this. I always want to write. My desire, you know, to write is ongoing, but I have to go to when I sit down to write, I'm never in the mood to write, but then gradually my attention drops to the level of my desire to write, and then I want to write. And the same
mm-hmm.
thing with sex. I may not be, I don't go through the day thinking about, I'm not 15 anymore, you know, so I can't
right,
go through the
right.
day thinking, but it's always there. But unlike when I was single and it would be more on my mind, of course that was a long
right.
time ago, but it'd be more on my mind being married. You have to go find it the way you find your desire to write every time.
Right.
And it's always there, but it's not going to be like bang, 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 bang so
sure.
much. Does that make sense?
No,
you got to like believe it's there. You can't want it to always be fireworks, like looking across and want to tear each other's clothes off. It's just not going to happen, I don't think.
Well, I think that's, I think you've put your finger on, people aren't sure, and look, I'm no expert. Listen, this is my struggle too. People aren't sure if it's okay not to have fireworks. I think especially in today's culture where it is all about that, I think it terrifies people often to think, what does that mean? Wait a minute. What does that mean that it's not fireworks? Is that a bad thing? I think people want very much to have really healthy, strong marriages. And I think we're all, you know, really vigilant about that, which is a good thing. But I think because of that, we keep a watchful eye on it. And when we see a shift in the fireworks, I think it can kind of hit a little alarm button. And then all these other questions come up. What does that mean? Why is this happening? Do I not have firm abs? Like, what? And then you're off to the races.
Yeah,
you know
sure.
what I mean?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Is it my lattes? I mean, what am I not doing right? Or what am I now finding fault with in my partner? Or
it's all frame of mind.
Man, yeah, it just really
it's all frame
doesn't
of mind.
Take my... And you lay sleep deprivation on top of that?
Sure.
And have a nice day. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Another,
you must be... Now, I would think going out with this book and how when was it first published? It's been out for
October 1st.
Okay, so it's been
a
few months.
A month and a half. Yeah.
Okay. So you're still fresh off the publication barnstorm, whatever your version of that was. So you must have talked to people. I imagine you talked to a lot of women. What's the conversation been like?
First what always cracks me up is they go, "Okay, I know exactly what school you're at." Was it XYZ? And they're never right. But it's always a different school. It's always a different school, and they're so sure it was that one, which tells me, okay,
they're
there's
all
a,
the same.
A through line here. Yeah, I did not dream this up, which I find very validating. But there's a lot of yes, I had this experience. I saw this particular slice of craziness at my school, or I get the opposite reaction, which is, and this is usually from people in different parts of the country. They'll say, "Are you kidding me? You really went through all that? You were running a committee? Like, all we do is just show up and drop the kid off. Like, what's wrong with you people?" And in which case I go, "You're a very lucky person that you live where you live, you know, or that you didn't get swept up or whatever." I mean, I totally respect that they go, "No way in hell would I have put up with that. No way." I got swept up. I'll completely own that. But I do get a lot of wow, or yes, I have a kryptonite guy. Oh my gosh, and that's what I'm going to call him from now on. Kryptonite guy. I've gotten 100% validation on kryptonite guy.
Now, did you have a kryptonite guy?
I did. He was nowhere near my preschool. He was totally different part of the country. But
he was there.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, from college, you know, when like a duckling, you foolishly imprint on some guy and, you know, forever, foolishly and stupidly and many other adverbs. But it was validating to me to have so many women come back and go, "Listen, if my kryptonite guy had shown up at my preschool, I would have had to change schools." It would be very destabilizing to my world. And I think that's a real thing. I mean, there's actually very little that happens between Justine and Harry. But what's destabilizing is all the stuff that blows up in her mind and how it's like putting on a different pair of glasses. She's suddenly looking through a different lens. That, I think, happens a lot when your children are that age. Because you're just going through this mill. Your body feels different. You know, things get a little unreliable. You're operating on a high level of exhaustion.
It's such a new role, too. I can remember we home birthed our first kid, and we did it.
Oh,
and
that's amazing.
And everybody was there, and the the midwife, and oh, no, we got the baby, and they checked, everything's good, and then blah, 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 and they said, okay, bye, you know, and then it was just my wife and me, and it was like, okay, an hour ago, we did not have an infant, and now we do, and suddenly we're parents, and in fact, I remember, I don't know if you went through this, I remember, so I was the first time I took my kid out for a stroll to, like, this kind of upper end mall where they have this little play area, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I've walked by this play area, you know, dozens of times because I used to go to this kind of place. And it's the University Village, for those of you who live in Seattle. That's where I was. And so I had Max in my hands, and I lowered him down into the play area, and I had a feeling that every mom, because mostly moms, and dad at that play was looking at me saying, what's he doing with that child? Who is that guy? Where did he get that child? Because he's clearly not a father. You know, I felt like a total
an Amber Alert on you.
Yeah, I know, but no one did that. Sure enough, they believed it was
That's
me.
Good. Oh my God! No, I felt totally unqualified, and my daughter's going to be 17 this weekend, and I still feel totally unqualified. So
really?
I don't.
At this, even at this late stage.
No, it's like getting really good at Parcheesi, and then you go back to play again. It's a different friggin' board.
Well,
you know,
it does. Yeah,
it's just
yeah,
like
it's
that.
True.
Every age. Your previous, it's like an alien mind wipe. Everything you thought you knew, whoosh, gone.
That's true. Now, do you have just one?
Start
or do you
over.
Have do you have two
have
kids
two.
Or three? You have two. So
I have two kids.
You got a little. And you know what? You, the first one doesn't really give you practice for the second one, because the second one is not like the first one. So everything you think that was going to be so useful, really.
Oh yeah.
Really not so much.
Yeah. No, and they were close together, so there was a definite fatigue factor. I mean, look, I can't complain, because every single parent has a right to say, I was exhausted or I am exhausted, no matter how old or how spread out or whatever. So I'm in no different boat than anybody else, but it is the universal boat of, man, I'm feeling a little stretched, or I'm feeling a little, you know, wiped out, or maybe the 18th cup of coffee will get me over the top, or whatever. It all turns into a cliche, which is really, if you do any kind of parenting humor, that's the enemy, is the cliche. And that's the challenge of doing anything these days, because there's a huge, huge bustling parental humor industry out there now.
Yeah,
and that's
the
challenge, is not to do the hack joke, not to do the hack reference.
And I write a lot more and more now in the self-help world, among other things. And in many ways, spirituality, which is sort of the general umbrella under which I write, is all saying the exact same thing, but from very different ways. And I've learned for myself is, if I can translate it accurately as I experienced it as possible, it will sound different. That if I have my own specific, it will just be different because I am different. But I really have to trust it, because ultimately, if you look at what I'm saying, it's the same thing Eckhart Tolle said, and the same thing Byron Katie said, and Jesus said, you know, the same thing everybody's saying, but in this own way. And so it's going to sound different, and hopefully someone will hear it. So I would think the same is true for you in the world of parental humor.
It's all about the voice and the particular, just the particular way you're saying it. It's like picking a lock, you know. A funny thing that's relayed one way may bounce off somebody, but if it's relayed another way, it goes in, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody is a different lock, and some people respond to, you know, to one humorist and absolutely block out another. And, I mean, luckily there are billions of people out there to both
read. There are.
There's
a lot of readers.
Yeah, a lot of readers and a lot of writers and a lot to choose from, and it's all good. I do think that sometimes can intimidate people out of writing, which I think is always a bummer. You know, it's like, you got to jump in. Give it your shot. Say your thing, you know?
Absolutely. Speaking of jumping in, we've got a caller, I think, who would like to ask you a question. Is that you, Jeffrey?
Great. It is. Happy Thanksgiving to you and Ann and your listeners, Bill.
Oh,
and again,
thank you.
I'm so glad both of your tenacity to hang in there and follow up with the future.
That's
wonderful.
Right.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
I first want to wish you unparalleled success with your latest book, Preschooled, and
thank
that you have forever have firm abs.
Well, that's the dream. First, I have to get them, and then I'll try to keep them. But thank
yes,
you.
I once had a six-pack. Now I have a keg. But anyways, let me get to my question.
I can relate to that.
I believe that Bill said that this is your first fiction novel. Did you have an aha moment or a series of events which led you to say to yourself, I have to write this book?
Oh, good question. All right.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's the second novel that I've written. It's the first that's been published, but it's the most recent book that I've written. So I started out ages ago when I was home with a baby, and I wanted to write a novel. I was switching careers, and so I wanted to write a novel. So that book has not been published, but it's kind of the one that I cut my teeth on. And I've always kind of thought of myself as a novelist throughout all these other projects. But the aha moment for this book, guys, that's a really good question. I wanted to write a book that used that backdrop, that kind of demented comedic backdrop that I experienced in preschool, to tell some of the, not darker, but more real stories of what life is like in that, first of all, I think of this as a workplace book. I love workplace stories. And I think for a lot of parents today, the school becomes their workplace. They have their own politics. They have their own assignments. They have their own successes and failures. So I wanted to write something that melded the workplace type mentality to the very uncontrollable world of small children and their tightly wound parents. The aha moment, I would say, which kind of influenced the book a lot, was I had started to kind of noodle around with the opening scene when Justine shows up for orientation, and that's kind of her first realization of what she's gotten herself into. And when Harry, the kryptonite guy, showed up in that scene, I had no idea he was going to be there. That was my aha moment.
He
just showed up.
Surprise character, okay.
Surprise character. And I was as surprised as everybody else because I'm like, where'd this guy come from? But I realized, okay, so what I'm doing now is for this character, I'm telling the story of having two immense pressures put on her marriage at the same time. The first is the transition from being a stay-at-home mom where she has a lot of control to being thrown in with this group of people who really push her buttons. And two, suddenly looking at her marriage through a different lens of comparing it to a fantasy, basically. For me, that's probably the closest to an aha because he just walked in when I was writing and I thought, okay, I guess this is what I need to explore right now is this particular kind of problem. And it was a lot of fun to do, I have to say.
Well, you were wise to keep him in there. woe betide the novelist whose characters start talking to her or him and ignores it. Someone shows up, you gotta say, okay, the imagination's hard at work here. Let's go along for the ride.
Yeah, I think it's a gift.
Oh, absolutely.
It's handed to you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Then you know it's the real stuff.
Yes,
you answered it beautifully, Anna. And, of course, as I knew it would, this half an hour simply flew by.
Oh, my gosh,
I know. Can you believe it? But I got time for one more question for you. So here's what I want you to do, Anna. I want you to finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
It's taught me that doing something on a regular basis, relentlessly sitting down to do something again and again and again will absolutely move a mountain. That is the overall lesson, especially long form. If you can make yourself do it, if you can get in a groove and do a little bit every day, you can truly change your life and move a mountain. And I hadn't believed that until I wrote a novel.
That's awesome. What a great thing to learn. What a useful thing to learn.
It's been life-changing.
Now you can tell your daughter all about it. She'll say, whatever, Mom.
Yeah, Mom, you're so boring. Seriously.
I know, please. Well, Anna, listen, I hope there's more novels where this came from.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure there are.
It's so fun to talk with you.
It was fun to talk with you. If I'm still doing this and you write another one, I'll have you back on the show.
Thank you. I would love that.
How's that?
I would love that. Have
awesome.
A great Thanksgiving.
You too. You too. Have fun.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, you too. Yes, Thanksgiving. So here's what I'm going to say to you folks if you do Thanksgiving. I'm a big one for, you know, you got the blank page, right? You got the blank page, and you're an author, so you're writing on purpose. You got to create on purpose. You got to fill that page on purpose. No one can fill it for you. And our life is really like a blank page, although it seems like it's not. But if you're going to create your life, you got to create the things you want. And you can't really uncreate the things you don't want. And one of the best ways to create the things you want is to be grateful. Be grateful for what it is you have and are interested in. And I'm not just talking about your health and your family, although those are nice things. But I mean, be grateful for every little bit of coincidence that seems to come your way, every bit of good luck that seems to come your way. Be grateful for all the moments that you feel at ease. And by being grateful for them, you pay attention to them, and in your own way, you learn to grow more of them. And that's really how you sort of create the life you want to lead, is by paying attention to what you like. Unlike in a book where you can erase the words you don't like, in life, you make your choices, and so it is, but you then grow the things you want and by focusing on what you want. And being grateful for those moments that you appreciate, that you notice, is one of the best ways to grow it. So maybe this Thanksgiving you can focus on that. In the meantime, I will be back next week with Christina McMorris, I think. Christina McMorris? Yes, Christina McMorris. Until then, go do something you love with somebody you love. Have a happy Thanksgiving.